Tim, are you there?
I am, yes.
Okay.
Somewhat out of breath, I ran home in the rain. It was beautiful, but could really have done without it.
Hello and welcome to the Super Bayern Podcast. We're now 10 games into Julian Nagelsmann's inaugural season as Bayern Munich manager, so it's about time for us to pause and look back at what's gone right and what's gone wrong for the Bavarian Giants over the past few months. And I'm Benjamin Scott. I'm here to do just that with my friends Garrett Kerber.
Hello.
Tim Richards.
Hello there.
And Sebastian Zimmerman.
Hi.
Yeah, well, like I said, guys, a pretty straightforward episode for us here today. 10 games into the Nagelsmann era, if you will, and it's kind of time to pause and look back and just see how it's gone. And really, I can't imagine it's going to be anything other than overwhelmingly positive discussion, considering that since Nagelsmann has taken over in competitive play, Bayern have won 9 matches, they've drawn 1, except for that first game against Gladbach. That was the draw where it was 1-1. Bayern have scored at least 3 goals in every single game, outscoring their opponents 46-6. I mean, really, the numbers are very, very impressive. Nagelsmann has got off to a great start to life here at Bayern Munich, it seems. But let's just talk about that for a little bit. Sebastian, what is, overall, just kind of 1,000-foot view, looking back, how have things been for the first 10 games underneath Nagelsmann? What has stood out for you?
I think the first two things that come to mind for me, the first thing is that you can tell that the whole club is like kind of more quiet now. There's less chaos. There's less tension, because we need to remember that as great as the Hansi Flick era, the pretty short, sadly short Hansi Flick era was, there had always been a lot of tension between Flick and especially Salihamidzic, which is something that's, of course, absent. This is something that's definitely positive. And also, there's no other tension. Like, it doesn't seem like there's another problem, like some players having big problems with Nagelsmann having problems with anyone on the club. I think that's number one for me. And number two for me is defensive stability. We have talked about before how Hansi Flick's method of defense would be like offense, basically. Like he would definitely stress attacking much more so than defending. That made for, well, spectacular football at times, but it also made for, sometimes a bit tense situations for onlookers, basically. And Nagelsmann definitely has done a lot of things right in that department, I would say. I'm a bit surprised that he managed to do this while switching like between at least 2 very different formations there. I'm also surprised that he has managed to do this with players like Süle, who didn't really look great last year, and who also apparently wanted to leave the club, and so on. So this is, on paper, this didn't sound like a great situation to get this new idea of defending in here. But yeah, he managed that very well, and I think that's very, very good. Of course, it just feels right that you just are less afraid of what's going to happen, no matter which team you're playing there. You can be pretty confident that our defense can handle a lot now. This is just a different feeling than under Flick, where you were basically said, okay, Flick's team can probably completely steamroll them by just being twice as good at attacking than they are, and then of course they will have to defend and we won't have to defend as much. So this was kind of the mindset under Flick, and this has changed a lot. Now it's like we have a solid defense, and from that defense we can also play very, very good offense. This is different. I'm definitely someone who appreciates spectacular football. I like attacking football. I've never been a huge fan of like the Italian way of playing this, kind of, if you will. But yeah, you kind of appreciate how good it can feel to have a very solid defense again when you didn't have it like that for like 2 years, basically, or maybe even more. So that's definitely a positive change in my book.
Tim, you've never been, I guess, too quiet about your criticism of Hansi Flick. And I think that's one thing you've always pointed out was his sort of lack of concern for defense and getting this team to click. What do you think, looking at what Nagelsmann's done in these first 10 games, is there anything specific that stands out that you can identify that, okay, he has made these changes and that is why we're seeing a better defensive performance from this team?
I've said it a couple of times already about how you have players like Upamecano, Sula, and Hernandez who, Upamecano wasn't a buying player last season, but Sula and Hernandez are two players that should have played a lot more last season. Okay, Sula's form wasn't brilliant. He's kind of been struggling with injuries the last couple of seasons. And we might even talk about this a little bit later on. There were reports that he actually wanted to leave the club recently. But these are two very tough tackling defenders who can also bring the ball out and start play. And I think that was kind of what Flick wanted with guys like Alaba and Boateng, I don't think you can really deny that they were fantastic servants of the club. Like, without them, we wouldn't have been as successful over the past 10 years as we might have been if they weren't there. But at the same time, you have these guys that are incredible defenders, very quick, very versatile, very strong, very prepared at any moment to put themselves in harm's way, because it means that Bayern like still have the upper hand. I think, and I guess somebody like Hernandez is just a quintessential player of, I guess, like Diego Simeone, like that whole attitude of leave everything out on the pitch. I really wish that we saw more of those two last season, because what we've seen so far is that with them on the pitch, you can have this really aggressive, really attacking football whilst also not neglecting any defensive responsibilities. I remember looking and seeing something on, I think it was on FB Ref, which is this huge database of footballing statistics, that Lucas Hernandez was making, he was making about 3 tackles per 90 compared to David Alaba that was making less than 1, and Jerome Boateng was also making less than 1. And yeah, okay, these are kind of like negligible numbers, like the difference between 3 and 1 isn't significant. But over time, it does add up, and you know that you can have somebody that is prepared to make a tackle to win the ball back and who can also start the attack again. I think that's kind of something that I've seen really quite prominently throughout Nagelsmann's tenure so far, is that he can have a team that is very prolific and score a lot of goals, but he isn't sacrificing anything else anywhere else on the pitch. It's really great to see. And it's really great to see guys like Sula and Hernandez get a lot of playing time, because it's guys like them that, I don't know, I've kind of gone back and forth on this, but matches like the one against Paris last season where we gave up 3 goals really, really quite easily, there's every chance that with somebody slightly tougher on the left side of defence, maybe Mbappe doesn't get through. Maybe he doesn't get through that easily. Whereas somebody like Alaba was regularly brought out of defence or brought out of position and it opens up space. I kind of don't really see that with Hernandez anymore. I think like the defence has been really fantastic, and all credit to the manager, but also all credit to the players, because they've all done incredibly well. But at the same time, I am a bit frustrated that, you know, it's taken this long to see it.
I guess if I'm going to kind of throw in a little bit of a, I don't know, not devil's advocate, but a little bit of a reality check. Bayern have definitely done well, and they've played about as good as we could have asked. So I agree wholeheartedly with what you guys have all said. However, as I look at who Bayern have played, and I look at what the Bundesliga table looks like, for example, and I see that the best team Bundesliga-wise that we've played so far is Cologne, who's sitting in seventh with 9 points. And then you got, you know, RB Leipzig has really, you know, struggled to get going under Jesse Marsch. Bayern drew against Gladbach. We beat Hertha Berlin soundly, which, you know, good. And like I said, we're beating the teams that we're supposed to beat, and we're beating them well, without much question. I'd say the best win that Bayern has so far on this season in all competitions is the one against Dortmund in the Super Cup. But we also know that the Super Cup is the Super Cup. Some, you know, things happen, and so it's hard to gauge how good a team is based on that one match. And then, you know, you look at the Barcelona match, beating Barcelona 3-0. And then yesterday, you know, Benfica beat them 3-0. So I think that Bayern fans, as Bayern fans, we have a lot to be really excited about. Because like I said, I do agree 100%. The defense looks so much better. It looks like guys are clicking. It looks like, you know, Leroy Sané looks like he's starting to get his feet under him and become that player that Bayern were hoping that they were getting for a steal of a deal. He looks like he's getting there. It looks like Leon Goretzka is becoming the type of player that we kind of forget about because he's just been so good and so solid and consistent, which is, I think, exactly what you want in that second, in that midfield pairing with Kimmich. Serge Gnabry looks like he's going to be, you know, taking it to another level this year. Jamal Musiala is a star on the rise. And so there's a lot to be excited about. However, I just want to put out the caution that to not be super surprised. Maybe not this weekend against Frankfurt, because they've been kind of struggling as well. They've drawn five games and lost one on the Bundesliga season. But that next week, coming off of a international break, they'll play Leverkusen, who is currently second in the table. And so if Bayern come out in that match and it's a little bit of a struggle, and, you know, maybe it ends up as a draw or, you know, a close win, I just don't want anybody to feel like, oh no, we've lost it all. This is a long season, and so there's still a lot of matches against better teams to be played before we get too excited. But all that said, it's really exciting to see a lot of these players that we've been hoping to see kind of come along, really reestablish themselves. Alphonso Davies, you talk about another guy who kind of worried about after he had been injured, and kind of even when he wasn't injured, his performance had fallen off. He seems to be, you know, back to being one of the best left wing backs in the world. And of course, you know, Robert Lewandowski is scoring nearly every match. So a lot to be excited about, but let's pump the brakes a little bit and not get too ahead of ourselves. There's a lot of much tougher matches coming up.
I think you bring up a lot of really good points, Garrett. It's so easy to find good things to talk about with this Bayern squad and the way they're playing between, you know, individual performances like Sané, Musiala, Gnabry, you know, pick a name and we can talk about them, and the team as a collective is looking good. But it's a bit more difficult to identify kind of, I guess, warning signs or things that maybe haven't worked out so well. And so, Sebastian, I'm wondering, who or what has stood out negatively maybe over the first 10 games of the season? Is there anything that you think stands out that is maybe a warning sign, or maybe you look at it and it's a bit disappointing.
Yeah, I think the easiest answer to this is definitely the right back situation, of course, which is like the smallest surprise in the world, basically, because, yeah, we hadn't been completely happy with Pavard. We hadn't been completely happy with the fact that we don't have like a typical right back on our squad. And now, of course, this red card on the weekend, for Benjamin Pavard. Yeah, this just leaves us in a pretty bad situation. Oh, sorry, no, I was wrong, right? It was on the weekend.
It was on the weekend, but that's not important.
Right. Sorry, I completely mixed that up. Yes, the thing is basically that we weren't happy with that situation anyway, and now Pavard, he's missing for two games, but also, it just makes the situation worse, because that also is another warning sign for like his form and his decision making. So we're not in a great situation there, and I think it's a bit much pressure for Stanisic already. I like the guy, I definitely like him, and I still don't hate Pavard, but yeah, this is still a problem. This is still an ongoing situation. We'll have to see how that works if we play Serge Gnabry basically as kind of a wing back on the right side. So this is just, there's just still a couple of open questions as to how that's going to work out. But other than that, I think one of the good things is that there are so few big problems, that there are no major conflicts so far. But of course, this can change. I already hinted at the Süle situation, for example. This is also something we will have to see what's going to come of that. I should say a word or two on this. So the news broke that Niklas Süle has been wanting to leave the club for a while now, and had talked to his kind of a bit shady agent about that, and even in very weird ways, like after we beat Tottenham yeah. very, very decisively, right? Then he said, "Oh, this is such a nice stadium. This is such a nice place. The fans are so much into it." I don't even know. I would like to hear more context of that. It could even be irony, but apparently it's not, from like how people have framed this. Apparently he was serious about that, and that's a major concern in terms of character, really. I feel. So this could become a problem in the future, because you might end up having him leave for no money, basically. But even worse, this could lead to like problems, because then you have to think what we're going to do with him, and then you create a new issue on the back line that we just kind of worked out. We found a good solution how this might be working. And of course, another question mark for me is if we're going to make the switches to our lineup that we have made recently. I feel it looks like we are probably going to play this more like, could call it a 3-4-3, I suppose. Maybe even something else. That's an interesting debate, how you would actually describe this lineup we have been seeing. But if this is going to be our new lineup going forward, there are kind of some questions as to who's going to play if one of those players is not able to. Like, is somebody else going to fill that Gnabry position in that system? Maybe Sabitzer, we talked about that, but we haven't seen that yet, so that could be a question mark, in my opinion. You're going to have to ask if we're deep enough on center back, if we're going to play with three center backs most of the time. That's another important question. Is Pavard good enough to play that? Can maybe Stanisic even play that? Or could Stanisic play the wing back on the right side? So these are for me kind of the most important questions, like where's Nagelsmann going with this, how is he going to develop this further, and do we have the right players to like develop this so it's as good as it can be? So this is, I guess, the biggest question mark in that direction for me right now.
You brought up a whole lot there, but I want to kind of take it one thing at a time. Let's talk about Nicholas Sulla, because you summed it up pretty well. The news that came out about him earlier this week was just weird. Some messages between him and his agents, you know, like you said, losing to Tottenham 7-2 and then texting your agent saying, hey, see if you can get me, you know, to join that club. That'd be awesome. That's just strange. And so, Garrett, you know, last time we talked, we already talked a little bit about Nicholas Sulla and the potential for him leaving and us signing Antonio Rudiger on a free, basically as his replacement. And we all were kind of in agreement that keeping Sulla was the preferred option. But with this news coming out, does that sort of change, I don't know, change the way that you see that whole conversation?
For me, it doesn't necessarily change a whole lot. I mean, I think it certainly does if that mentality is still prevalent and he's been, you know, looking for a way out, even to, you know, much worse teams and, you know, all those sorts of things. I think that there could definitely be some red flags there that you just want to kind of get out from under. But I don't know. Like, it seemed like he was doing pretty well under Niko Kovac, but like there were still some signs of struggling there, and we know that there was a lot of people that struggled on in terms of, you know, how they got along with that manager, and it clearly seems like he had some issues with Hansi Flick as well. You know, I believe it was at some point last year where Hansi Flick was questioning his fitness or something, and they were talking about him being overweight and all sorts of things. And now you have him playing for Julian Nagelsmann, who, you know, he played for at Hoffenheim for a little bit, and he seems to be getting a lot of playing time now and doing really well. So to me, it doesn't change necessarily that I would rather have Nicholas Sulla than Rudiger. It just maybe it makes that gap a little bit smaller for me. Cause I guess to me, if he's happy at Bayern Munich under Nagelsmann, I think you keep him. But if his mentality is still kind of looking elsewhere, if he still thinks that, you know, Tottenham's a great place for him to go right now, then, and he's kind of got one foot out the door, then yeah, that would switch things around for me. But I guess I haven't read anything that kind of indicates that. I don't know. Maybe you guys have heard different.
Yeah, I don't, the way the news came out, it does seem like most of that was in the past. And so I think that, you know, I think it's a case of him wanting a Premier League move if it's available, but maybe not necessarily trying to force his way out. At least that's how I read it. But yeah, it's
and as weird as it is, I have a buddy that I talk to quite a bit who's a Tottenham fan. So I kind of have a little bit of a soft spot for them. And plus, you know, when we play them in Champions League, we get to have big goal scoring parties. So I wouldn't mind him going there, but it still is a bit odd. I would not consider that a step up or even a lateral move
I just wanted to add real quick that apparently these conversations became public because there's a lawsuit between his two agents that used to be like partners, but now they are not anymore, apparently, because one of them claims the other one has been doing things behind his back, and then the other one claims one of them has inserted himself into like deals that he wasn't even part of, and so on. So this is apparently a kind of a very messy situation, and that's where these messages became public, basically. Just for a bit of context there.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and I think that to me even furthers the point that we don't really know how he's feeling about all this now. And I don't know if anybody's talked to him, if they've continued, you know, maybe they've avoided, you know, letting him have kind of media availability because of that. But I think Nagelsmann kind of addressed it a little bit in saying that he felt like that was kind of a gray area, kind of a potentially crossing the line to release messages and stuff. So, but yeah, it's, if it's in the past, it's not a huge deal to me. If it's a more current mentality, then that's an issue.
While we're on the topic of, I guess, sort of negative things, things that haven't been so positive over the past 10 games, we actually had someone reach out to us on Twitter, Tim, or someone put a tweet out, I think, from the account, and someone responded, and I think it was pretty fitting. You know, they asked about the sort of lack of rotation, as they've said, that we've seen underneath Nagelsmann. I'm wondering if that's making any of us nervous, and I think that, Tim, that's a really good topic for you to address, because that's, again, something that you always, not always, but you like to criticize Hansi Flick about, was his lack of rotation. So I haven't necessarily noticed it underneath Julian Nagelsmann, but do you think there's been a lack of rotation and that might be hindering some of the guys who maybe aren't the first 11, Tim?
No, not at all. I actually think the opposite of that. I think the way that Nagelsmann has been managing this squad has been really quite good. It's been kind of exactly what is needed, knowing how, you know, Bayern's squad availability goes, like, throughout a season. Everything starts really well, everybody's firing on all cylinders, and then come February or March, somebody gets badly injured and then they're out at a really crucial time. In last season, it was Robert Lewandowski, and even like the season before that, where Bayern were almost like, I don't want to say blessed by the fact that COVID postponed elements of the Football League, but Robert Lewandowski wasn't really supposed to play the second leg against Chelsea. Like, he had a hernia operation, and that happened to now just coincide with the footballing world being stopped. So that's kind of like, that's like two seasons in a row where Lewandowski was, okay, there is like a slight asterisk here. It's two seasons in a row where Lewandowski was going to miss quite a major game. And the way that his minutes are being managed right now, it's fantastic, especially when you can see that somebody like Choupo-Moting is actually like significantly better than a lot of fans had first thought that he was going to be. So Robert Lewandowski will play 60, 70, 75 minutes. He'll score his goals, and the game will then be kind of put beyond doubt. And then you get the guys off, and it means that guys like Gnabry and Goretzka and Süle and Davies and Lewandowski as well, like all of these like really important players, it means that they're not risked any more than they need to be. And in my eyes, I think that's really good. I think that's a really good way of doing things. Okay, like there is the whole issue where it's like it's the same starting 11, virtually the same starting 11 every single week. But if you're making substitutions regularly and early and giving other players an opportunity to get a run out and show what they can do, I think you can kind of afford to do that. There's a difference between putting the same team out every single week and making substitutions after 85 minutes, and putting the same team out every week and making substitutions after 70 minutes. I do think like that period of time is very significant. And it's benefited from the fact that Bayern have been on the front foot right at the start of these games, and they've been looking to attack early on. And it means that they can take an early lead and not necessarily take the foot off the gas, but they can kind of go at their own pace. They're not pushing uphill. It's really great. I guess like I can see why people aren't a big fan of the rotation in terms of the starting 11 being the same every single week, because the squad depth is at times okay if you look at it purely as like, okay, we have somebody here, we have somebody here, we have somebody there. It's more like, you know, if the Champions League final was tomorrow and you don't have your starting X position, then like, what's the drop off there? I feel like the squad depth in that sense, I guess like the quality of depth, potentially leaves a little to be a little to be admired. But when you have guys like Sabitzer and Nianzu, who are and Rocco as well, like he's not a young guy. I think he's 23, 24, I think, maybe even 25. I can't remember. I know so little about this guy. But I know that I'm not alone in that. When you have guys that are potentially going to be valuable assets to the club in the later stages of the season, it would be great to see what they can do early on, especially considering, I guess, like, for want of a better term, the controversy around the Sabitzer transfer and how exciting it was for Bayern fans and how incredibly frustrating it was for fans that aren't Bayern fans, people that, you know, the neutrality of the Bundesliga is in their best interest. Everybody wants the Bundesliga to be fair and everything. For those guys, it would be great to have seen these guys and see them more, because obviously Sabitzer hasn't started. Nianzu hasn't played 90 minutes. These are things that I'd love to see that. But at the same time, as we mentioned, it's been 10 games. It's been 10 games out of hopefully just over 50. So there's still plenty of time. I wouldn't be surprised to find that Nagelsmann's still trying to work out what the best squad is. For my money, I think he's doing quite well with the squad management. But I do completely understand if people think that it's to do with if they have an issue with how he's putting the same team out every week, then yeah, I definitely get that.
Yeah, and I think you make a decent point. He's doing the best with what he's got, almost. Squad depth isn't necessarily Bayern's strong suit at the moment, given the injuries and everything, and so not too surprising. I guess one question that we could ask, you know, what is something that we wish we would see more of? Maybe there's been something that has caught your eye in one game, or you've seen a glimpse of something, you're like, oh, I really like that, or you know, something has stood out and you're like, I really want to see more of that specifically. Is there anything, I guess, for any of you guys that stands out as something you want to see more of?
Honestly, no. I'm like really happy with how the team's playing. I think obviously, like, it would be cool to see what like a proper Nagelsmann back three can do, that he kind of has done it at times. But it's not really been as good as I think a lot of people were hoping it would be. But I do think that, like, with the right players, there are some players here, like, in this squad that would be absolutely fantastic in like a pure back three. I'm thinking guys like Alphonso Davies, Sané, Gnabry, and also like the defenders of Upamecano, Sula and Hernandez. That's an exciting three-man back line that I feel would complement each other really, really well. I'd love to see Omar Richards. I think he did quite well in preseason. But again, I don't feel like I'm missing out on anything. I'm seeing a lot of goals. I'm seeing a lot of clean sheets as well. It's been really great. It's exciting. I guess, like, not in terms of like a play style thing. I feel like I'm missing out on anything. I'd like to see more of more of the other players, but I'm not furious, and I usually am. So this is something of a novelty.
Yeah, I'd only say, like, it'd be nice to see Rocca at some point, or Omar Richards, or those would be kind of things that would be nice, but I definitely don't need those things. And I think if anything, it would just be that he would, you know, commit to a right back, maybe, you know, commit to either playing Sula as a right back or going with Stanisic, just like to feel, you know, confident in that position as much as we possibly can at this point. But those are really, like you said, Tim, it's really like reaching for things to kind of put on that wish list. I guess another thing I would kind of like to see Tolisso play at some point, just because even if they expect to sell him in the winter, I'd appreciate, you know, seeing him play in a Bayern shirt a few more times, if only to help kind of get a little bit more money for the club when they do sell him. That maybe be another thing that just kind of pops into my mind from time to time, but I know he's been injured as well. So yeah, not a whole lot to complain about really in terms of what we've been able to witness. I'd like to see Kisan's not hurt players in training. That would be another thing.
Man, I totally forgot he even was on the team until you said his name. That's
same.
It's not great that his only contribution to the season so far has been injuring other players in practice. Well, before we wrap up, Sebastian, you brought up something in the chat earlier today that I think warrants at least a little bit of discussion. Evidently, the second team, and especially one player on the second team, is playing quite well at the moment. Can you kind of fill us in on what's going on there?
Yes, of course. First, I guess I want to remind everyone about the whole situation with the second team, that they were relegated last year from the Dritte Liga now to the Regionalliga Bayern. So this is kind of the context of this. And I was now kind of wondering whether this is a blessing in disguise, having a new start in the Regionalliga with a little bit less pressure, or whether this is kind of a problem, because obviously they're now playing on a slightly lower level. We can now definitely say that they have been playing very well so far. They're in the first position, slightly better than Bayreuth, and then there's a bit of a gap to the third place. And I think, was it last week? Let me check. This was, when was this? Yes, this was the 12th match day. I think this was last week or something. Who stood out especially is a guy called Motika. He's Nemanja Motika. I think he's Croatian, probably. No, let me not get that wrong now. I think
he's Serbian.
Serbian. Yes, right. He's Serbian. Anyway, definitely a very interesting guy. And like, he has now scored 13 goals in 14 games and 4 assists on top of that. So a very interesting player. And definitely much better performances than we have seen last year, like in a way where you kind of feel like, yeah, this has been an improvement despite taking into account that this is now one level lower than last time. Another bit of context here is that the Dritte Liga is kind of the bottleneck in the German system, or has been since its existence. Because there's a lot of teams that go into the Dritte Liga and then invest a lot of money to stay there or even go up further. And a lot of them get into trouble because they don't manage to stay in the Dritte Liga and get huge problems. Therefore, they have accrue a lot of debt and so on. Of course, this is a problem that our second team doesn't have. That's probably a good thing. But yeah, I think this could be exciting. They have been doing very well. As I said, Motika is definitely a new, interesting player who only joined this year. But there are other interesting players that we already know about. I think the most exciting ones would be, from my opinion, would be, of course, Amin Dazeep, who we have already also seen with the first team. Bright RMB is a very interesting player, or Torben Rhein, of course. I think they are all very interesting, and right now I'm hoping that this could be a good thing for us, but I'm also kind of fearing that this is just the effect of now being in the Regionalliga, and I was kind of going to ask your opinion on that.
Well, I mean, like you said, the lower division is obviously, you're playing against less talent, but it is nice to see, I guess, in my opinion, a striker actually, you know, thriving in the second division, with the second team, where, as you know, Joshua Zirkzee really struggled when anytime he played with the amateurs. Fita Arp obviously didn't have the best of time. And so maybe, just maybe, this Motika will come up and be our long-term Lewandowski replacement or successor. Maybe he'll get some minutes with the first team in within the next, you know, couple of years. I think no matter what, it's nice to see that, you know, the second team is playing well. And I think that we would all agree that it's only in Bayern's best interest that they get promoted again and they try and play in the third division as often as possible. Well, if y'all have nothing to add, that is all the time that we have for this episode. So if you've enjoyed listening today, if you're a regular fan of the podcast and you haven't done this already, please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review. We greatly appreciate that. And if you want to get in touch with us, there are a few ways that you can do that. You can email us at superbayernpod@gmail.com, or you can follow us over on Twitter at superbayernpod and get in touch with us there. All of our episodes can be found on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts, we're probably going to be there. Thank you for listening. Go out and tell all your friends, and we'll talk to you next time.